You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Is setting bail at an amount that defendants cannot afford a violation of due process of law? Some Maryland lawmakers think so, and they're trying to change that. Today, we'll discuss reform of the cash bail system and what it would mean for a justice system that many have described as broken. We're joined by Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch in studio. Brian Frosch, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here, Kojo. Thanks.
In a letter to Maryland lawmakers who sought your opinion on bail reform, you wrote back saying that setting bail at an unaffordable amount raises the, quoting here, significant risk that it violates due process. How does it violate due process?
Well, you run the risk that you're jailing someone for being poor, and that is a violation of due process. It's really a violation, I think, of everything our country stands for.
800-433-8850 is the number to call if you'd like to join this conversation. Call now, call early. Have you or has someone you know been unable to pay bail? Do you think our criminal justice system is broken? Would bail reform help fix it? 800-433-8850. You could send email to kojo@wamu.org or send us a tweet at Kojo Show. You can go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. Mr. Attorney General, what kinds of crimes are defendants being held in jail for? And what can you tell us about the bail amounts that are set for them?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kojo. The crimes that folks are being held for range from the trivial, like trespassing or urinating in public, all the way up to murder. And the problem really is at the lower end for the defendants who are at low risk of offending while they're on release or at low risk of failing to show up when their trial is set. And unfortunately, there are hundreds of people in jail every day in Maryland for low-risk offenses and when they're low-risk defendants. And they're there just because they can't afford to pay relatively small amounts of bail.
When is, in your view, pretrial bail justified?
Well, I think that it can be justified if the defendant is somebody who is likely to hurt somebody when he or she is released, or if the person is likely to flee. Now, in Maryland, you don't need bail to hold them. We allow preventive detention. So if you've got somebody who's dangerous, you don't need to set $1 million bail. But in that circumstance, I don't think bail would be unconstitutional.
If judges start taking into account ability to pay, how many people do you think this would affect in pretrial detention?
Annually, it would affect thousands. And it would, I think, save the state, save the counties money. And it would save them money, if it were done properly, in a way that would not increase the risk to public safety.
800-433-8850. Does lowering or eliminating cash bail concern you in any way? What do you think lawmakers should consider before reforming the current system? 800-433-8850. Brian Frosch, earlier this year, state lawmakers eliminated mandatory minimums for nonviolent drug offenses and increased penalties for some violent crimes. How has this affected how your office pursues justice?
Well, our office handles all the criminal appeals in the state of Maryland, Kojo. So it affects us in that way, but for the most part, that's it. The state's attorneys are the ones who prosecute most of the street crime in our state. Our office has an organized crime unit, and when we have multi-jurisdictional or very large cases, we're involved, but for the most part, the impact is felt by the state's attorneys.
Also joining us in studio is D.C. Superior Court Judge Truman Morrison. Judge Morrison, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Mass incarceration has been something of a national hot button issue, but how do you see that playing out on a local level?
Well, mass incarceration certainly involves, first and foremost, pre-trial incarceration, needless pretrial incarceration. And in this country, we continue to fail to operate the front end of the American criminal justice system, and we fail the people we charge with crime, particularly poor people and people of color, every day by producing results that are irrational and unfair and unsafe nationally. In the District of Columbia, I'm proud to say, we are the nation's model, and we do not use money bond at all, and we produce effective, successful results.
What experiences have led you to believe that the cash bail system is unfair?
It's fundamentally unfair because it sorts out who goes home and who doesn't go home on the basis of their wallet rather than their risk. And the problem in America is not that there are people in jail pretrial. There will always be some people who should be because their risk is too high. Our problem as a nation is that we have way, way, way too many people, and they're largely all the wrong people. And that's because we use money to decide whether you go home rather than the risk that you pose to us.
The way you mentioned this, the way D.C. handles bail is quite rare in the country. On an average afternoon, the city's busiest court releases, without ordering bail, about 90% of the people who have been arrested and held overnight. How did pretrial release become the norm in D.C.?
It became the norm for a lot of reasons that would take more time than we have, but the fundamental one reason is a change in our bail law. We incorporated a single sentence from the federal bail law that said that judges can use money bonds only if they do not result in the detention of the person, meaning you have a right to a money bond that you can meet. When that law went into effect, judges had to find another way to deal with people.
We're talking with Truman Morrison. He's a D.C. Superior Court judge on the issue of bail reform, along with Brian Frosch. He's the Maryland Attorney General. Inviting your calls at 800-433-8850. Gentlemen, don your headphones because we're about to hear from Joseph in Reston, Virginia. Joseph, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. So, Kojo, I have a question for your guest. And my question is, moving back before we get to the place of having to post bail, how does the nature of the severity of a charge and that process developing, who determines how severe the charge is, that then coincides with what bail is set for the person? And can we do something to affect the charging process so that some of these bails are not so enormous that a person can't pay to begin with?
I'll have both of our guests respond. First, you, Brian Frosch.
Well, the way, certainly the severity of the charge affects the decision about whether or not to release somebody. So the way it works in Maryland at the moment is that a judge will likely set a higher bail for somebody who commits a more grievous offense. But the way it works, as I understand it, in the District of Columbia and other jurisdictions like Kentucky and Colorado that have alternative systems, is that they do a risk assessment. And they look at two things. Is the person likely to offend if he is released? And is the person likely to show up for trial? And then based on that risk assessment, they determine whether or not or on what conditions the person is going to be released. And what we've seen in those jurisdictions is that they release more people, they get better appearance rates when trial comes, and they do a better job of public safety. That is to say that the people don't commit crimes while they're on release, or at least there are fewer crimes committed on release than in Maryland, where the sole criterion most of the time is how much is your bail going to be set for? How much money are you going to have to pay to get out?
Truman Morrison.
So the short answer to your question is that the architecture of our criminal justice system in America is that the executive branch prosecutors are allowed pretty much unfettered discretion to decide who to charge and what charge to bring. We are unique in the District of Columbia, in the whole country, in that with very serious cases, we do not use money. We use preventive detention so that rich or poor, after a due process appropriate hearing to decide if you're too dangerous or too unlikely to come back to release, we hold you with no bond in the D.C. jail.
Here is Matt in Bethesda, Maryland. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you very much, Kojo. I have a two-part question. And my two-part question is, would the bail then be set on like a sliding scale type system? I will admit to having been completely ignorant to this until listening, you know, to the show. So would it be based on a sliding scale type system? And then the second part of my question is, how do you go about making sure that it's fair to people, you know, because I'm sure that there's going to be an outcry from people with higher economic means if it's on a sliding scale system, having bail set at a higher level for the same type of crime as somebody that their bail is going to be set at a lower level.
Brian Frost.
Well, if you're just using bail, you run into the problems that we were describing at the beginning, and that is to say that let's say you have two people who are charged with trespass, and the judge decides, I'm going to do them a favor. I'm just going to set bail at $1,000. Normally, that would mean you can pay a bail bondsman 10% of that. $100, you're out the door. If you're a wealthy person, that's nothing. You're gone. When your trial is set 2 months from now or 3 months from now, you'll have spent the previous 90 days at home, at work, etc. But for lots of people, $100 isn't attainable. They couldn't scrape together $100 if they spent the whole time in between their charge and their trial trying to put it together. So they end up sitting in jail for 2 months or 3 months at great cost to the state and at great expense to themselves and their families because they lose their jobs, they lose their apartments, they don't pay child support. So the issue is, I mean, judges do use a sliding scale. It costs less usually to get out for trespass than it does for murder. But it's the use of money bail for poor people that causes the problem.
Here now is Marie in Springfield, Virginia. Marie, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Thanks for taking my call. So in January of 2015, in Prince William County, I actually was a rape victim, and the rapist was able, he sat in jail for maybe 2 weeks to a month, but then was able to make bail, and the court process took like a year. So that's an entire year that someone who drugged and raped someone, which is not a minor crime, was able to go about his business. And meanwhile, I think it's completely unfair that we do have these poor people who are committing nonviolent offenses who, like your guests have said, are just kind of sitting there waiting for nothing.
Judge Morrison.
So I think you've described in a nutshell the fundamental outlines of the injustice of our pretrial justice system in America. I would say to you that in our city, hopefully, employing as the only city that does so a preventive detention law with a crime like rape, we would hold a hearing, and if the government could prove by clear and convincing evidence, less than the government would need to prove at trial, that the person who's accused is too dangerous to release, he would be held with no bond. He could not buy his way out. And so the two fundamental evils are that huge numbers of poor people who shouldn't be in jail sit there just because they're poor, and that truly dangerous people are able to write a check and go home very shortly.
Marie, when the person who assaulted you was able to make bail and was released, was that person Did that person threaten you in any way during the course of that time?
No. So he did not contact me, and part of the end result of the proceedings was that he's not allowed to contact me for a year, basically. And then he's not in jail currently, which highlights a bigger problem with the justice system. But that's not what we're talking about right now. He didn't contact me at all. He didn't do anything, as far as I know, other than just be out and working. And he could have easily hurt other women in the meantime.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, for sharing that with us. We got an email from James who raises an interesting issue. Please also ask about removing the requirement for individuals to have a fixed address to be released to. It causes many individuals who are experiencing homelessness to be held until their court date. Care to talk about that, both of you gentlemen? First, Brian Frost?
Well, yeah, that's another way of saying if you're not wealthy enough, you're going to have to spend time in jail. The key question is whether that person is going to show up for trial and whether that person's going to harm somebody while he's out. So merely not having a fixed address ought not to be something that automatically incarcerates someone.
How is that handled in the District of Columbia?
Well, I agree with what Attorney General Frosch said. Our risk assessment, and we have a very robust risk assessment to try to assess people's risk pretrial before a judge decides what to do with them. Having a fixed address is way down on the list of important probative things. And what we do is try and compensate for the absence of a fixed address with a homeless person. We have them call us once a week so we're in touch and we can help them remember their court date. In extreme cases, we make them come to court, down to court and visit us once a week. The point is there are numerous strategies, and having a money bail system discriminates against poor people and certainly against homeless people.
800-433-8850 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. What do you think lawmakers should consider before reforming the current system of cash bail? Does lowering or eliminating bail concern you in any way? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org or a tweet at Kojo Show. Judge Morrison, in what ways does the criminal justice system rely on defendants not being able to post bail?
Well, that's also a very important question. Many places in this country, New York City being a prime example, assuming I'm understanding your question about rely, criminal justice systems count on the fact, as in New York, that half of the misdemeanor cases resolve themselves within an hour. And the reason, which is shocking, and the reason that they do is that defendants plead guilty to things that could never be proven or that they, in fact, didn't do at all, just to avoid going to prison, losing their jobs, their homes, all the supports in the community. And that's a fundamental evil of our money bail system. Let me just say one more thing, Kojo, which is that it's really important to understand the uniqueness and significance of the uniqueness of the District of Columbia's approach, because every state in the union decides liberty on the basis of money, how much you have. We are the only place in America that decides who goes home not on the basis of money. We don't use money bond, and we have shown that that can be safe, fair, and effective. 90% of the people come back, and 90% of the people are not rearrested. We release 90% of the people, and we do it all without money.
Indeed, you precisely answered the question I asked. There was a piece of the New York Times in August of last year that says that even controlling for other factors, pretrial detention was the single greatest predictor of conviction, that in fact people generally would plead guilty simply because they didn't want to be held in jail for a very long time and they could not afford to get out. 800-433-8850. There have been several high-profile crimes this year committed allegedly by people who had recently been released for misdemeanors. In light of these incidents, should D.C. consider a stricter pretrial release standard?
I don't believe
I should say
so.
Several highly publicized.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I'm only aware of one misdemeanor, but these are very tragic and unfortunate events. I know that Chief Lanier, for whom I have great respect, on her leaving, lamented events like this in D.C. I think we need to rely on the bigger picture. Whenever that happens, it's an immense tragedy. But we have thousands and thousands of criminal cases going through our court system, and I repeat that 90% of the people, nearly 90%, last year 89% of the people who are released without money bonds on conditions that we supervise are not rearrested for anything. And critically, Kodjo, for years, less than 1% of the people we release are rearrested for violent crimes. We're not perfect. No system can be perfect. It's tragic when these things happen. But I'll tell you, they don't happen to the extent that they happen around the country when judges set $500,000 bonds and dangerous people buy their way out.
We're going to return to former Chief Kathy Lanier's comments after this short break, but you can still call us, 800-433-8850. Have you or has someone you know been unable to pay bail? Do you think our criminal justice system is broken? Would bail reform help to fix it? 800-433-8850. I'm Kodjo Nnamdi.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Go to WAMU.org/lifteveryvoice to learn the stories of these incredible African-American changemakers and to hear special interviews spotlighting those who have impacted the arts, sciences, sports, and activism. Go to WAMU.org/lifteveryvoice.
Welcome back. We're talking about reforming the bail system in the United States with Brian Frosch. He's the Maryland Attorney General, and D.C. Superior Court Judge Truman Morrison. We're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kodjo@wamu.org. Does lowering or eliminating cash bail concern you in any way? 800-433-8850. If you've called, stay on the line. We will get to your calls. But before we get there, I wanted to continue the conversation we're having in the wake of former Police Chief Kathy Lanier's comments that the criminal justice here is beyond broken, when on the other hand, Judge Morrison, you seem to suggest that it's maybe the best in the country.
I do suggest that it's not perfect, but it's the best that we have, and it is pretty close to a national model. I understand Chief Lanier's frustrations. And one of the things this city is going to lose when she leaves is that something most people may not know, which is that at 3 in the morning when there's a shooting anywhere in the District of Columbia during her entire tenure, she got out of bed, got in a car, and drove to the scene. She sees existentially up close and personal in ways that I see only much later these kinds of horrible tragedies. I rely, however, on the data about the success of our system, which is that we do operate, on balance, a safe system. 90% of the people are not rearrested. Less than 1% of the people are rearrested for violent crime, and we release 90%. Hopefully, we are preventively detaining most of the people that we should be, who shouldn't walk among us pretrial, but we're not perfect. And I understand her position. I respectfully, strongly disagree with her about the dire state of the pretrial. She was not just referring to our bail system, Kodjo. She was also referring to people that the parole board does not take action on, and people whose probation and whose sentences are not ended, and so on and so forth.
Brian Frosch, how would you grade Maryland's criminal justice system?
We have a lot of room for improvement, and our pretrial system is a major area in which that's true. Just to piggyback on what Judge Morrison said a moment ago, you know, we hire the best people we can. We hire the best lawyers to be judges and to make these decisions, who gets released, who stays in jail. We can do better than that by giving them better tools. We have big data now about who commits crimes, when they commit crimes, how they commit crimes. And most of the pretrial assessment tools that are in use across the country, and I assume in D.C., but certainly in Kentucky, Colorado, and other places, they look at who is likely to offend, who's not likely to offend, and put that into the mix when the judge makes the determination about whether or not somebody's going to be released. So in Maryland, we can inform our judges better, and we can eliminate some of the inequities that are inherent in putting a price on somebody's freedom.
On to the phones. Here is Matt in Salisbury, Maryland. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Instead of actually talking about bail, I just wanted the judge's thoughts on the private prison industry's quota system, since most have this ridiculous quota of maintaining like a 95 to a 99% capacity. And if they don't reach that capacity, then the state has to pay what is essentially a fine to the prison. Therefore, the state, since they don't want to pay these fines, require the police to enforce menial laws and arrest people for victimless crimes like pot, for example. If you get rid of that whole quota system, wouldn't you free up just a huge amount of these court cases and be able to focus more on more important things?
Well, the District of Columbia, it's my understanding, is on the way out of the business of a privately run prison.
My understanding is we have one small part of the jail that used to be run by the Corrections Corporation of America, and we are ending that. I agree completely with the caller's understanding and opinion about this. I think pay corrections for a fee has proven itself to be an utter failure all across this country. And it has no place in our criminal justice system, and it produces just what the caller describes. In order to make money, they require jurisdictions to say, "I promise we'll give you X number of cases every year." A truly ludicrous proposition.
Thank you very much for your call. We move on now to Chris in Severna Park, Maryland. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. My name is Chris Floor. I'm an attorney, and I used to be the legal director to the Lawyers at Bail Project, which was a grant-funded project done at the leadership of Professor Doug Colbert. I'm late to your conversation here, but I'm thrilled to hear you talking about this issue that's really important. I want to say publicly that I thank Judge Morrissey for the work that he's done with facilitating the Appointed Attorneys Project to implement our decision in Maryland to have lawyers at the earliest stage of bail. You posed the question whether I have any concerns about getting rid of cash bail and corporate sureties and the like, and I have zero. I've been involved in this issue for a long time, worked in two different states in terms of bail issues, and I just don't want to see people punished anymore for being poor. It's a fundamental precept of our system that we should not punish people who are not able to afford bail. And with all the different tools we have, and I heard the tail end of the pretrial discussion, those things work better. And I'm just tired of seeing bail bondsmen get wealthy off the backs of poor folks. And I think it's high time that this governor heed the recommendation that was made under Governor O'Malley's task force that they eliminate cash bail and corporate sureties. Thank you.
Brian Frosch.
Well, I think that I agree with everything he said. I think we can do better justice, we can treat people more fairly, and we can get better results at the same time. And on top of both of those things, we can save money for the states and the counties.
And what happens to the bail bonding industry in places like the District of Columbia, Judge Morrison?
Kojo, let me just quickly interject. I should have said this at the beginning. I've been a judge for 37 years in the Superior Court, but I am not speaking today for the court at all. I'm speaking for myself. I hope that's obvious. Anyway, what happens is that when we finally stopped using money bond in the early 90s, the profits, as your caller said, off the backs of poor people, dried up, and so they packed their bags and left. It is still legal in Washington to use money bond. It is still legal in Washington to get a license and be a bail bondsman. But we, as an entire court system, have shown ourselves and the nation that you don't need money bonds and bail bondsmen to operate a successful and fair system.
On to June in Silver Spring, Maryland. June, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, I want to say that I'm calling in as a former assistant U.S. attorney, and Judge Morrison knows who I am. But I was in Superior Court before the system was changed, and I certainly practiced there most of the time after the system was changed. And I want people to know, number one, Judge Morrison is right. Number two, the system that we have in D.C. does work by and large. And I was a homicide prosecutor in D.C. I did have some cases where my defendants were not held during the pendency of the matter, and those people came back to court. So I would encourage the state of Maryland to adopt this system. I would encourage other places to do so, because I want to say also the lady called in and she said she had been the victim of a rape and the defendant was out on bond. You know, the point is that that purity is not to punish the person. And even though she felt that he was guilty of rape, I'm not saying he wasn't. That doesn't mean that in the end he was going to be found guilty of rape. And that's something we should all take into account, that just because a prosecutor charges somebody, that does not mean in and of itself they are or they will be found guilty. And that's what I have to say.
Judge Morrison, I think you actually know June.
I do. I recognize her voice. Hello, June. We spent many, many trials together in court. So June, I think, would agree with many, many prosecutors in Washington, in my experience, which is that rather than having the old days that she experienced as well of a judge saying $250,000, of course, judges never say out loud what they're doing when they do that. In the old days here and around the country today, everywhere, they never say, you scare me, I think you're too dangerous, so I'm going to try and guess that I'm setting a bond higher than you could ever make. Judges don't say that out loud. They hope desperately that they've guessed right and that you'll never post the money. And good prosecutors want dangerous people held in an appropriate way without guesswork. And so, by and large, I mean, I know of no U.S. attorney in the district who opposes our way of doing things as opposed to the random guesswork of money bond.
June, thank you very much for your call.
Sure.
Brian Frost, this is an issue that you have been working on, expressed support for since you were in the Maryland State Senate. Why did it not get out of the Senate then, and why is it now resurfacing?
Well, it's resurfacing because it's been a constant problem. It's an economic problem. It's a justice problem. And it's difficult to achieve consensus around it. It's a complicated issue. I think that this is an issue that can be resolved by our judiciary. I think it likely will be resolved by our judiciary. In terms of the money, one of the things that I think is particularly salient is that it costs about $100 a day, $100 to $150 a day to incarcerate somebody in Baltimore City. The costs of supervising somebody pretrial range from $2.50 a day to $7 a day. I'm not sure what it is in the District of Columbia, but those are national estimates. And the injustices of holding somebody who is, as June said a moment ago, presumed innocent until trial are manifold. We end up having people who lose their jobs, lose their apartments, lose their families, and it cries out for reform in our state.
Judge
Morrison. Kodjo, let me add, we have some very rich, important, and I would say dramatic research about the price that we all pay, not just the accused people whose lives are wrecked by being needlessly incarcerated pretrial, but the price we all pay. The Arnold Foundation published an exhaustive two sets of peer-reviewed research. I'll just share two findings with you. One is that if you are held in jail before your trial, you are four times more likely to be convicted, 400%. And how we are shooting ourselves in the foot as a country in public safety terms, if you are held in jail for as little as 10 to 14 days before trial, compared to a person who gets out within 24 hours, you are more than 40% likely to commit another crime before your trial compared to the person who gets out within 24 hours. They published a long set of just breathtaking findings about the price we are all paying in this country for the needless incarceration of people who don't need to be in jail.
Here's John in Winchester, Virginia. John, your turn.
Hi, and I'm an attorney in Winchester, Virginia. I practice primarily criminal defense in the Shenandoah Valley. And this is both are comments, I guess. First off, I have noticed, at least in the Winchester, Frederick County, Clark County area, judges begin to move towards what are called PR bonds, which are non-cash bonds, with pretrial services providing supervision through Old Dominion pretrial services. And I think some of that has been as a result of the heroin and opiate epidemic that has been going on a lot. You're seeing a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't be involved in the criminal justice system getting sort of hoovered up and thrown into it. But the second point is, and it's a comment on one of your panelists who just said that he's seen research that says you're four times as likely to be convicted if you have sat in jail pre-trial without bond. You know, I think as a defense attorney, that is part of the perverse incentive of you get to trial, you've been locked up for 60 days on an offense that's only going to require 30 days of jail time. The prosecutor comes to you and offers you a deal of, hey, probation, or I'm sorry, time served. And even if you think you have a good case, as soon as you say that to your client and they say, well, can I get out and go home today? They're done. They're sold. They don't even want to try it. But at any rate, those are just my observations from Virginia.
That's one of the points that Judge Morrison was making earlier. But we're running out of time very quickly. However, Judge Morrison, we got this email from Dale. How do you deal with chronic offenders that fall into this category, especially since we have disassembled our public mental health system?
Well, the failures of the American justice system with regard to people challenged with mental health issues, which, of course, are not their fault. It's nobody's fault that you suffer with mental illness. We do a very, very lamentably poor job with regard to people challenged with mental health. Chronic offenders who suffer with mental health are almost always very low-level severity crimes. In the District of Columbia, we have adopted an approach of having a mental health court where we try to offer people treatment, supervised mental health treatment in the community. And if they complete that period of time and they meet regularly with a judge and the judge is involved in their lives, it has been tremendously successful. Unfortunately, it just scratches the surface of the number of people posing mental health problems in our justice system.
Truman Morrison is a D.C. Superior Court judge. Brian Frosch is the Maryland Attorney General. Thank you both for joining us. That's it for the show today, but mark your calendar for this Wednesday when producer Taylor Burney will be at Politics and Prose on Connecticut Avenue for the latest in our WAMU In Your Bookstore series. She'll be talking with Britt Bennett about her much-anticipated debut novel, The Mothers, starting at 7 p.m. Yes, it's debate night, but you can still make it to your TV on time, or you can use it as an excuse if you need a break from political rhetoric. Either way, get the details at WAMU.org/events, and be sure to meet us back here tomorrow at noon. We'll talk with the director of D.C.'s Public Library, Richard Reyes-Gavilan, about what to expect when D.C.'s flagship branch, the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library, closes for renovation. That's all coming up Monday at noon. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.